Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Episode 3 of Season 3 of the Umbrella Academy, Pocket Full of Lightning, may be over, but we're just getting started here on post-show recaps. I'm Mary Kwiatkowski, and with me, worshipping the glowy thing in the basement, is Marissa Garza. Marissa, thanks for joining me. I could really use your help figuring out how to hotwire my briefcase.
I'll do my best. I've had to jump a couple cars a couple of times, but briefcases might be a little bit different, but I'll do what I can.
Yeah, I still don't 100% understand the whole briefcase thing. Like, in this season, they do a lot of opening it and looking inside. And I'm like, what's inside?
They're so big.
Yeah, and how do you determine where you want to go? Do you just think it? Do you have to pre-program it? I don't know, because it seems like they've implied different things sometimes.
Yeah, well, we know in, like, the first episode, was it the first, second episode? Lila's like, Berlin, here I come. And then right. In this episode, Five's like, I can't jump more than a few minutes. So I don't know. I don't know. Time's a mystery.
Time's a mystery. The commission's a mystery. We'll get into it. So what did you think of episode 3 on a second watch? Just big picture.
It's definitely like a, okay, let's move everybody along type of episode. It wasn't like, to me, there are some moments. I mean, I think there, I could always laugh at a picture of Klaus and scuba gear trying to like break into a house. I think that will always be like a funny Umbrella moment scene for me to think about, but nothing that I put in a briefcase to take to another time zone type of thing. It's definitely, I think, like a bridge between episode 2 and episode 4.
Yeah, I think so far, based on my memory, if I had to rank them so far, episodes 1, 2, and 3, I would say 2 is my favorite, then 1, and then 3. Like 3, like you said, it's a, we left off part of the plot, let's move it along. There's a couple funny lines, but there's a lot of kind of just needing to clue each other into what they were doing last episode, basically.
And we do get like the explanation of the grandfather paradox, which I appreciate. Like I'll take from this episode.
Yeah, at least we have that. But I just feel like coming after episode 2, which had so many funny moments and action-packed moments, I don't know about this one, but it was okay. But we'll get into it. We'll break it down. Of course, up top here, just so everybody knows what the process is, we are covering season 3 of The Umbrella Academy, episode by episode at this point. If you haven't listened to our binge coverage, definitely go back and listen to that at the end after you listen to all the episodes, because I still think there were some gems in there. But these episodes will be spoiler-filled recaps, meaning that we will be talking about each episode from the perspective of having watched the series in its entirety thus far. So if you don't want to be spoiled up through season 3, go finish the season and then come back to join us. But mostly we'll be talking about what happened during episode 3. Of course, you can follow the Umbrella Academy specific feed at poshowrecaps.com/umbrella-academy-feed or poshowrecaps.com/super or poshowrecaps.com/binge. Lots of timelines, lots of feeds to check out. Our recaps have been dropping about twice a week on your feed through July. And of course, if you have any thoughts and want to join the conversation, you can join the Discord for poshowrecaps.com on Patreon, or you can reply directly to us on Twitter or at super@poshowrecaps.com.
Whew. You did it. Well
Gotta
done.
Get it all out.
Well done. That
was my first time reading through the whole list. So I felt pretty proud of myself. Like you mentioned, this episode starts with commission training video of what a grandfather paradox is. And I just love the style of how they did this. They say, Paradox Protocols, the complete commission guide to temporal anomalies, chapter 68, the grandfather paradox. And then we see like a little, like a little skit of the thing.
It's like a very, like, it's definitely the most high production commission instruction we've seen thus far in the series as a whole. But I always do appreciate like commission instructions, because I was old enough that when I was in school, film strips were a thing. Oh. And we had to watch like instructional film strips, like, this is how this works. And it's very like 50s instructional type of situations. And that's what these always remind me of. And it's just like, oh, okay. But I don't know what it was and how they produced those film strips, but it like gets into some part of my brain where it's like, pay attention. Like, you're gonna be tested on this information. So whenever they come on, I'm like, oh yeah, okay, what can I learn?
Yeah.
And temporal anomalies is also a really great phrase in this whole thing as well.
I had never heard the term like temporal, which I get now. I mean, it means time, but like I had not heard that until watching the movie Tenet, which I'll be talking about throughout this segment. So just buckle in. If you're not into Tenet, well, you came to the wrong person. Mary Kwiatkowski, number one Tenet super fan. But the video watch, it explains what the grandfather paradox is. I'd say it's a little bit racy for a company video. But okay. They said that if you accidentally create the grandfather paradox, then that can put time, space, and everything in living peril. And they're like, good thing that hasn't happened so far.
Yeah, I love it that they're like, with vigilance something and strategic violence, the commission will be able to keep you safe from the grandfather paradox. We've been lucky so far, though, so keep on it.
So Marissa, in your own words, what is the grandfather paradox?
Okay, so the grandfather paradox is like, okay, hey, I'm Marissa, I'm sitting here in 2022, this is a fictional story that I am telling, this is not real. Then I like say to myself, oh, hey, what if I got really mad at someone in my lineage, say my great-grandfather, because I never met my great-grandfather. Got really mad at my great-grandfather, and I said, hey, I don't like this man. Let's go back in time and kill this person. Then the idea here is, okay, so I go back in time and I kill this person. And then my great-grandfather's never alive. Well, if my great-grandfather's never alive, then my grandfather's never alive. And then my mom's not alive. And then I'm not alive. So how can I go back in time to do the initial, act of violence if I was never born? So I don't know if you were looking for a succinct answer. You're never really going to get that from me, Mary. But that's kind of how I think of it.
Yeah, the paradox is just essentially you can't go back in time and change something that would then affect your life, because if your life was affected, how could you have gone back in time and done that thing?
I think not just your life, it's like the creation of your life, like your existence.
Exactly. So yeah, it's a it's a paradox. It's, you know, it's unsolvable. It's not something that,
right.
They're paradoxes are built to mess with our brains. And if you are a fan of Christopher Nolan movies, you'll know he likes to put paradoxes in a lot of them. And Tenet, one of his most recent movies, chock full of paradoxes. And the one that they talk about a lot is the grandfather paradox, because that movie has to do not exactly with time travel, but with time sort of manipulation. And the idea there is just, look, you can't change the past to be a world where wouldn't exist today.
Right.
Then
right.
How could we have done that to begin with? So
we found out in the last episode that is what the reason why this episode starts off with that is that in the last episode, just to catch everybody up, is that what Five has realized has happened because their mothers have died.
Right. And not only died, but died before they were born. It wasn't right. like they exactly. were born and then murdered, because that right. maybe would be okay. I mean, not okay.
It'd be different.
You know,
that wouldn't be the grandfather paradox. It'd be a different paradox.
Right. Exactly. So again, the whole timeline thing, a little frustrating, because in a place where the grandfather paradox exists and is a thing that we're talking about, that is usually something that has to do with there being one timeline, which is also how the commission has explained it before, right? Like the commission is out of time and they pop back into different timelines or into the timeline in different places and make sure that the world is happening the way it's supposed to. Mm-hmm. It's kind of confusing that that can happen and also multiple versions of yourself can be a thing. Because, okay, like, let me think about it this way. Mm-hmm. In the Umbrella Academy season one, mm-hmm. they go through, they live their life.
Yep.
Then they travel back in time.
Yep, to 1960s Dallas.
Yes. Okay, then they pop back into the future in 2019 again. And they're like, hang on, our other versions of us that would have existed. It's like, well, why are there other versions of them that would have existed? Because it should only be one timeline. Now you've said that you've completely changed the timeline. And I guess what I'm saying is, let's say that this new version from season three, if they popped back into 1962, are there versions of them from season two walking around again? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's how they're just like cloning themselves essentially by time traveling, which is confusing to me.
Which means there's like a gazillion Fives all over time and space, because right. they've been all over time and space.
Which I guess makes sense. I don't know. It's like but it should only be one him. So I can sort of, the Five thing I kind of understand more, because there's only one version of him. It's just that they're existing throughout time in all these different places. The part that's more confusing is the idea that they would have gone back to 2019 and there would be like a new, different version of them that they have no knowledge of and never lived that life of.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. But there was that one version of Five. There was old Five. There was old Five that one time in the 1960s when he had to fight himself.
Yeah, which is also confusing.
Yeah, right?
In the original time, it's like, because if that happened, already this whole paradox should have existed back in season two, because at the point in time where little young Five meets back up with older version of Five, which was just him like 28 days ago or whatever, like 12 days ago at that time, he talks to him, fights with him. And then if you imagine that Five goes through the portal to 2019, mm-hmm. but that Five has now fought himself when he was younger. It's not like that always happened. This is now different. Right. And so that should have catalytically changed everything from season one.
Which it may have. What if season four is just a retelling of season one, but on a different timeline?
Don't try to understand it. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah, pretty
anyway,
much.
I also find that this training video is pretty annoying, because they're like, here's a thing. Here's a problem. Don't do it. But we're not going to give you any solution to like how to fix it in case you do it.
It's kind of just like, oh, cross your fingers. Like that's what you need to do at the end, is just cross your fingers and hope it never happens.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the basis of what is starting to unravel a lot of things. And I think, I mean, I guess that's kind of the point. Having understood the entirety of season three at this point, everything we just talked about and killed our brains over with all this time travel, the answer to all this of how it makes sense is just, it doesn't, the world is crumbling. There's a glowy thing in the basement because of all this stuff that's happened that shouldn't make sense. And all of this going back in time and changing things, it's causing a lot of problems.
Yeah, I think it was just like, okay, for this season, this is how we're going to explain what's happening. Go. Not like,
you know, try what? To
figure it out.
Hold on. I just thought of another thing.
Okay.
In the beginning of season one, before season one even happens, Five jumps forward into time into the apocalypse.
Yes, he does.
Because of the death and destruction he sees in the apocalypse, that shapes everything he then does.
Yes.
Moving forward.
Yes.
However, when he goes back in time and comes to 2019, because of the events that they do there, apocalypse still happens, but everyone's alive at this point. Like, he saves all their lives, essentially. Yes. Because when he was in the future, he saw all their dead bodies.
Yes.
So we've already changed things. We've already messed with the timeline.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway,
I thought you were going to say, and then there became zombie Umbrella Academy, because then, like, the dead versions of season one came back to life because of what has happened with the Kugelblitz in here. Like, what if the Kugelblitz powers? Who knows?
Who knows
where we're going?
We have no idea. Anyway, so where we left off last episode was that Luther and Sloane were dancing on the ceiling, if you know what I mean. So we've got a little bit. This is really the only main song reference in the episode, is when they're playing Do You Believe in Magic?
Well, and Dancing on the Ceiling.
Well, yeah.
Well, they don't play it. I was very upset.
They were talking about
it. Yeah.
There was a lot of referencing songs and tiny little bits of songs when Luther was making mixtapes later. But at this point, this is really the only like sequence with a major song in it. Luther's real jazzed, and he's going to buy some contraceptive in order to, I don't know, continue dancing on the ceiling.
That's because he does that now.
Yeah, he does that now. Now.
Now.
I don't know if this, I mean, yes, this is a thing I do now. Yeah. He's so proud. Oh, Luther. the energy pulse from the basement goes out again. And this is the first time we see episode three. We're already murdering people. The Kugelblitz is already happening. We find out throughout the episode from like radio and news and stuff that like, it's not just this guy, like hundreds of people across the city and probably farther we sort of see the pulse go out and sort of retract, and it's going out a little farther each time. So at this point, maybe it is only in the city.
Well, and no, because they went to Amish country and they got the cows in Pennsylvania.
That's true. That was in Pennsylvania. So yeah, it's going out at least that far.
So I'm sure it's like at Ohio by now. I don't know, you know?
Yeah. Meanwhile, the rest of the Umbrella Academy is discussing the fact that their moms have all died and the paradox that they created. And this is kind of the start of Allison getting real, like,
this is where it starts
yelling at Five. Yes, she's like, you keep dragging us through hell because you're obsessed with the apocalypse. And, you know, I just want to go home. And he's like, this is our home. Deal with it. And it's like, okay, you're not being very sensitive. But also, Allison, I think, is very much clearly like clinging to like a false hope that they can somehow just easily write everything. But I don't even know what writing everything would be.
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely in a vengeful frame of mind, right? Like, just basically she's going to blame everybody for everything, and she's going to keep her eyes focused on wanting to get Claire back. Like, that's the only thing. However, the storyline, I think, for me, just still rubs me the wrong way, because we never saw, at least I don't remember, any inkling of her getting rageful or acting in this way in prior seasons. So to me, it is just such a, like, who is this person? How, why, all empathy is gone. And I understand that the point that the show is trying to make is that, like, hey, everybody, this is a traumatic event, and this is how Allison's responding to it. It just still isn't connecting for me, even on the second watch.
Yeah, the closest we got was her. She sort of snapped at Vanya a couple times in the first season, like, why are you even here? You don't know anything about caring about people. You always push people away.
Yeah.
But this is a little more like angry than it is sort of, I don't know, snappy. But yeah, that's happening. I just thought again, okay, this is not a thing, but this is how I wish time travel worked. And this is how I feel like Allison kind of hoped time travel worked. Would basically be like, you travel back in time, and then when you come back to the future, you could say, like, let's all pop back into our existence, like, before the apocalypse happened in 2019. But, like, basically that when you would travel back, you would somehow pop back into your life, and that the you that was living, like, that you're just them, like, with
your
the
consciousness
knowledge
would travel.
Right. Not, like, creating a new version of yourself coexisting in the timeline.
Well, there are some people that would say that does happen. Like when deja vu, like when I get deja vu, it could be just my consciousness went somewhere and now I'm back here. And it's like, oh, that's the thing that I remember. You know, like, I not saying like, one, I don't know anything about time travel. I've never done it physically. I have no idea what happens. But I think there is a way. I think that is a way to look at time travel. I don't think it's like when you said this is not how time travel works, like in Umbrella Academy, I think it could work.
I think the problem with that is it implies that you can only travel through, that time traveling would also like erase the future, right? I don't know. Anyway.
Well, and one thing I think that is something to keep an eye on as we watch through this, and I know this was brought up in the Discord as well, is just kind of whose reality are we jumping into when we're time jumping? So like, when time jump one happens, we all went to 1960s. Why did we go to 1960s? But Five was in charge of that jump, right? He was in charge of this jump. But like at the end of season three, is this Allison's reality? Like whose reality is this?
Or is it Reggie's?
Yeah, exactly.
Or both of them?
A thing to think about.
I don't know. So it seems like at this point, though, Allison's upset, but the only one who's really upset about their moms is Klaus. Mm-hmm. And this is when he does the, like, this is Rachel. Don't I look like her? And all that. And the rest of them are like, yeah, whatever. Our mom is Grace, and she also doesn't exist in this timeline. Or at least not in the same way.
Yeah.
It's interesting that they haven't put two and two together yet of, like, of the fact that they know they created a paradox and they know their moms died. And then they're like, maybe Reggie murdered them. It's like, no, the paradox probably did. Come on, people, get on board. Like, you have all the pieces. Just
but
put
it
the
wasn't
two together.
Well, it wasn't this paradox that did it. It was the last paradox that impacted this paradox.
Isn't it all the same paradox? I mean, I don't know. It's
all
a
big ball of twine.
It's a big ball of twine. It's the world's biggest ball of twine, you might even say. So Luther comes back, and this is a lot of the humor comes from like little Luther moments in this episode. Everyone, it's like, oh, wow, you're late. He's like, didn't anyone notice that I was kidnapped for the last day? I was like, no, totally did not notice.
They're like, oh, so glad you made it back safe. Oh.
Yeah. Meanwhile, at the Sparrow Academy, Ben is he's just such an angry boy in this season. And he really wants to be the new number one. There's sort of this guise of like wanting to fight the Umbrella Academy because they took Marcus, but none of them really seem to like care about Marcus, which I feel like is a little contradictory toward the idea they were trying to put off to Luther last time, which is like, we're a cohesive unit. But I think that's very much like, we're a team, like a company, but we're not a family. We don't have like personal relationships with each other, but we do have loyalty, at least until someone's gone. And then we don't really care. We care about avenging them, but we don't care about actually finding them.
Well, why do we care about avenging them? Do we care about avenging them because their faces are on merchandise and we need to sell merchandise? Or do we care about avenging them because we actually care? I mean, this is an interesting conversation because there's a lot of, you know, times in my life where I've been at a workplace where it's told like work is family. And so kind of looking at the Sparrow Academy through that lens is pretty interesting for me.
I mean, if you asked Michael Scott, he would say that work exactly. and family are the same thing.
Exactly. Well, and so many times, you know, it's like, we're a family here. And I'm like,
are we though? Pretty sure I do this so that I can get back to my actual family.
Right, right. Yeah. So, you know, that's just one lens that I look at the Sparrows with is like, oh, they're a corporate family. They're not family.
Yeah.
And family comes up a lot in this episode too. Diego's like, what's more important than family?
It's interesting because we saw so much in the first episode about like their fans, their merchandise, their faces are on billboards everywhere. And yet you would think that they would be thinking like, we need, like, how are we going to deal? Like, we need to give a press conference. Like, Marcus could be dead. But I guess at this point, they just think he's kidnapped, at least until the end of the episode. Yeah. So Faye says that at one point, Ben was number one, but that didn't go well. And this is something by the end of the season, we still don't really know much about this. Ben is still a big mystery in any timeline. We know that it had something to do with, is it Jennifer? I wrote Jennifer, but mm-hmm. I'm like,
yep, it's okay. Jennifer.
Jennifer. And this seemed kind of like a retcon because later in the season, like different Umbrella Academy members are going to be like, oh yeah, like what would happen with Jennifer? We never heard about Jennifer in the first two seasons.
Nope. Yeah.
So I don't know if this is new.
Like the first mystery of Ben is how did he die? The second mystery of Ben is what happened when he was a Sparrow and couldn't lead. And the right. third mystery is who is this Jennifer person? And are they all connected? I guess it's the same that they are. But, you know, we don't know until the story continues in one way, shape, or form.
Yeah. So Ben and Faye kind of argue, but he's kind of trying to talk her into being like, look, if I move up to number one, now you're number two. And I guess that's how that works. I don't know. It also seems like if you harm the birds that Faye releases, that also like affects Faye. So like, yes, she's got more power, but she's also more vulnerable maybe because he's mm-hmm. sort of like grabbing one of the birds, like choking it. And she seems sort of immobilized because of that. It's interesting.
Yeah. The whole insight into Faye's room was also very interesting to me. It's very tall, very like bird cagey
yeah.
type of thing. And I just like when the birds eat, are you eating? How does this work?
I don't know. They're sort of all one entity, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. And Grace is going to walk by and be like, oh, Marcus isn't kidnapped by the Umbrella Academy. God took Marcus in the basement. And they're like, yeah, whatever, Grace. Like, they don't pay attention to her at all at this point. Oh, poor Grace.
They just like, well, she comes in the room and she's like, can I clean it? And Ben's like, do it quickly. Like, they don't care. Like, even before she's like, hey, God's so in rude. The basement. They really just don't really like her for some reason.
How times have changed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess, it's interesting that Grace as a robot still exists in this universe, even though.
Reggie gonna Reggie. That's all I got.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. So we see the old man from the first episode check into the hotel, Lester Pocket, who we later find out is Harlan. And
quick question. Do we know why he's named Lester Pocket?
So in a future episode, when they do the flashback to Sissy and Harlan, we see that Sissy changes her name to like Donna Pocket. And so I guess she changed his name to Lester Pocket. Lester. Ugh.
I know.
No offense to any Lesters out there, but Lester, geez, you have a chance to change your kid's name and you go with Lester. Anyway,
I mean, her name was Sissy, so I don't know.
Later we see Lester eating one of the sandwiches he packed and he's like listening to the tapes and then he puts on like a stethoscope and is listening to his stomach grumbling. I don't even know if by the end of the season we quite understand why he does this sort of ritual of like listening to things.
Yeah, I think we did. Yeah, I think I have an inkling.
Okay.
He is very into picking up people's vibrations. So listening to different vibrations, if he told himself like Vanya sounds like bees, then I'm going to listen to bees until I can like be closer to that vibration. Or, and I say Vanya because that's who they were to Harlan at the time until now. He was listening to Bees on the Bus in episode one when he got on the bus. It was a tape named Bees. And then like today he was listening to like today in the episode. He was listening to like Aboriginal or like chants, like very
it seemed like throat singing.
So very low frequency. So I wonder if he just has the acute ability to know what everyone's frequency is and use that as like a GPS.
Homing in some way. It's interesting. I was thinking it was more of a like way to, it seems like he has not very much control over his ability. So I thought maybe like sort of listening to something and tuning out the other noises might be a way, but yeah, this
I think that's part of it too, because in season two, we know that he does not like a lot of noise.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's also like a coping mechanism. And then like listening to his own stomach is like finding himself, like listening to himself type of thing. Like none of this on first pass hit me. It wasn't until like I watched the whole season and there's the scene in the drive-in where he kind of explains how vibration plays a big part in his powers.
Good point. Well, we'll talk more about it because we got more Harlan coming up.
Yep.
But at this point, Victor and Allison are going to meet with Ben and Faye. They want the briefcase back. Chronologically in the episode, this is kind of annoying because at this point, we know that Lila has the briefcase and the briefcase doesn't work, but that they're just horrible at communicating with each other. So they don't know this. Allison calls Faye a flock of she-gulls and Ben laughs. That's a good one. It would be a little better if Faye's hair was like flock of seagullsy, but it's okay. Allison does sort of pretend that they have Marcus as like a bargaining chip, which definitely takes Victor, like throws Victor off. Because I think Victor's whole plan was like, why don't we just go be honest and be nice and they'll understand.
Well, based on like the conversations that Victor has had with Marcus, like that's what they think will work, you know? And I think Victor's just really focused on getting back to Sissy and understands that Allison is hurting, but also is kind of like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? And Allison is like really determined. She's like, no, I don't care. Like, let them think that we have him.
Yeah. So when they talk about this after, Victor's like, I understand why you're hurt. I also want to get home to Sissy or find a way to, you know, make this all work out. But we need to be more of a team. We can't keep improvising. And there are some moments here. Allison is like very positive. Like, yeah, I've got a badass little brother. Like all that, you know, is it's not like Allison is like full angry all the time. It's just, we're definitely starting to get that change that's going to lead to where we get by the end of the season.
Yeah. And on the second watch, I did have to question, I was like, was that genuine or was that her manipulating Victor to just be around Allison? Because Allison's power is very powerful, but it's even more powerful with Victor's power.
That's a good point. Yeah. I didn't think of it that way. I think I was trying to think of it from the more positive perspective of like, maybe this is, you know,
it could, both could be true. Both could be
yeah,
true.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like Allison could be like, I really, really care about Victor and this is what I think. But also, it's also convenient that Victor's around at the same time.
Yeah. And I don't know. I will say, you know, we've been talking about this a lot. We're not the only ones that overall, like on the internet, I've seen most people just be very frustrated with what happened with Allison this season.
It's hard, I think, for me as an audience, because I want to feel for Allison. I think it's just something, like I said, the fact that it's just such a stark difference and such a stark contrast. It's kind of like, it reminds me of Game of Thrones a little bit. It's just kind of like, whoa, okay, we're here now. This is how we're going. And I'm not given enough time to build empathy for Allison, which I've had two seasons to really build empathy towards in another way.
Right.
So it's just kind of like, oh, okay, I guess we're here.
Interesting. It really does seem like Allison is clutching at this idea that they could go home. And I'm curious to know what you think. Where does Allison think that she is going to travel with a briefcase to write this?
Well, she wants Claire to exist. So I think she thinks, because I think she mentions this a number of times through the episode, that like she never should have left 1960s.
Oh, so, you think she's just going to go back to the 1960s?
Yeah, because
that means that like Claire does exist in that timeline, even if she's not with her, and then just go hang with Ray.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know. I haven't heard any other like hypotheses from her, but I also, I think as we talked about in a previous episode, I don't know how Allison knows that there is a Claire in the 1960s universe.
I also think that like, we don't know that this traveling into the future has not changed the past, right? Like,
right.
In the original 2019 timeline, you imagine that Ray and Sissy had existed and they had their own separate lives. When you've gone back in time, their lives have probably drastically changed. I mean, for sure, Harlan's life and Sissy's life changed, you know, but they probably just stayed on the farm and chilled forever. And so if you go then into the future and then back in the past, who knows what version of Ray and Sissy and whoever is there? And also, who knows what version of 2019 existed? So who knows where Claire is? That doesn't guarantee anything. I really feel like the whole lesson here should be, you can mess up time in all directions every time you change, and there's no way to get back to where you were, essentially.
Well, then, like, as a human and as an audience member, I can take that and translate it to, the only thing I have right now is the present moment. And that's what I can be grateful for.
Can't change the past.
Yeah. Have to accept where I am and make the most of it.
Yeah. Later after the scene, Faye and Ben are going to find Grace in the basement and are going to see the glowy thing. And she tells them it took Marcus and it might take others. So at least at this point,
they know.
And so at this point, Faye and Ben at the least either know that Allison lied, or that they know that these two things cannot both be true. So they're a little bit confused here. But as we continue to talk about the Umbrella Academy and everything that's happening with Klaus, which is one of my favorite scenes in this, let's take a quick break first.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans.
That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, back from the break. This reminded me a lot of the cars driving in the opposite direction from season 2. I've seen a lot of memes posted about Klaus walking through the hotel in the like weird hat, goggles, and trench coat, and then later getting into the I don't know what this is. Sewers, pipes of some sort outside the Umbrella Academy in snorkeling gear. Like, where did he get this?
So. Yeah, that was my first question. I was like, where do you get this? Especially, I mean, I think we brought it up a little bit earlier, but like they had no money. So like, unless Klaus like stuffed stuff in the hotel, like past Klaus, like left him stuff. But
yeah, this is something that Diana brought up in the Discord, which was like, how do they have money now? In the first episode, Luther had to trade his watch for hotel rooms. I think we brought it up last time. We just have to kind of assume they got money somewhere somehow.
Or
because otherwise the rest of the season doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Well, we know in this episode, Diego at least has $8. So I don't know. I don't know how we got there, but yes, money's coming from somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know. So it seems like Klaus has done this before because he kind of is like, you know, like the smell of my youth or something. I don't know why he was doing this.
This takes me back.
Yeah. So he's going to go into the academy in order to talk to Reggie because he's on a singular mission by himself this episode to figure out whether or not Reggie might have murdered their parents. And while talking with Reggie, Alfonso and Jamie come in and bring him pills and bills, as they say. And the dynamic here is so interesting. We've talked about it a little bit before, but we really get the full scene here of a very different Reggie. And I think the main thing I want to talk about is, given everything that we've seen throughout season three, how does this factor into Reggie's plan? Like, without Klaus having come here and talked to Reggie and told him how to stop taking the pills and things like that, would we ever have gotten to Oblivion? Because it just seems like Reggie was kind of coasting, or was I, you know?
I think like you'd have to go back to the Pogo leaving the medicine situation to get to Oblivion. I think Pogo was the wall, for lack of a better term, in stopping until the pills run out. Unless the pills run out, I don't know how they've been. I don't know what type of, they look like pretty funky pills. I don't know where they're getting them from.
Yeah, so it seems like Reggie, because I think we kind of determined, like, he clearly, his full plan was adopt 7 children in order to do Project Oblivion, 7 children with superhero abilities. And then, oops, he got, you know, sidetracked or whatever. Like, the wall was built by Pogo and then the Sparrows giving him these pills. And so I guess Klaus and the Umbrella Academy coming here sort of put him back on track, removed the blocker.
Right. 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 And I don't know if that was like intentional. I don't want to give like, I don't want to give Reggie godlike powers, right?
Like, I know, because my first instinct was to give him a lot of credit and be like, he somehow knew this was going to happen. But that just seems
too much. The only thing that version of Reggie knew is like when the next episode of TJ Hooker was coming on. Like, he didn't really know much else.
Yeah, and he's not a superhero, although he is an alien.
He's an alien. That part, you know, he may have been in the super motherboard of the universe one day and knew that this was gonna play out this way. I guess if I'm gonna give any credit, it's to the motherboard, it's not to Reggie.
Yeah, we're also gonna get a lot of foreshadowing to the rest of the season in this scene. We see that there is a painting of a white buffalo on the wall in Reggie's study, which I guess Klaus also notices. And then we see that
he's the spiritual one, you know.
Right. Yes.
So.
And when Reggie falls asleep, he mumbles the word Oblivion as well. So any other thoughts on this whole scene and this interaction?
I mean, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the, like, rekindling, not really, the first formation of a father-son relationship between these two characters. And also, like, just the emotional maturity coming from Klaus, kind of understanding, oh, hey, Reggie, you've been traumatized. I've been traumatized. I know what that's like. Let me help you, type of thing. I really liked seeing the growth from Klaus in this scene. This scene, like, a very growth point for him. a very big growth, like from a in the whole 28 days perspective, not in the how many years we've been watching this TV show perspective.
Yeah, this is our sort of third sequence. So one from each season of Klaus interactions with Reggie. We had the Klaus going to the barbershop in limbo or whatever with Reggie. We had the Klaus meeting with the rest of the family when they all met up with Reggie in season two. And then this one, we've also had a lot of Luther and Reggie and Diego and Reggie, almost no Allison Reggie individual interactions.
Good observation.
And then I guess the Victor Vanya stuff only really in flashbacks from childhood. There haven't been a whole lot of other,
right,
other ones. I was trying to think. Yeah, I don't know. I was trying to formulate some sort of, oh, you know what? I just said there was no Alice and Reggie stuff, but I guess there is in this season, isn't there? Like they, when they team up. I mean, it's like,
oh,
very
yeah.
And we don't see as much of it. A lot of it's sort of like what Five thinks is happening or overhears. But
yeah.
Anyway, so at least we're getting more awareness to what the situation in the basement is, because Klaus is going to follow the noise down to the basement and see Grace worshiping. And Klaus is like, whoops.
Well, and he's also just like, wow. Like, he's like in awe of the situation. But also, like, if I saw this, like, this is another big point of the whole series or season for me. It's like, Klaus, you're not going to tell anybody after you see this thing? I mean, he's also Klaus, so, like, I get it. Like, if out of all of them, this one makes the most sense to not tell anybody. But also, like, you were just wow and an odd, and you were in your old, like, hey, do you guys remember this big glowy ball thing in the basement? Like, anything like that, and we don't get anything from him on that.
Yeah, I'll have to track that over the next couple episodes, because I guess I just assumed that was something that he tells them at the beginning of the next episode, but I don't think it is. I think you're right. I think that doesn't come for a little while.
Yeah. He's like, in a couple episodes, he's like, oh yeah, by the way.
Yeah. So meanwhile, while this is happening, Luther and Diego, everybody's kind of separated this episode. Luther and Diego are prepping for the sparrows, but in very different ways, because Diego is hanging out with Stan, who just wants to hang out with Diego, but he's doing security detailing of the hotel, and he gives Stan $8 to go chill in the city, which is just some really great parroting.
Yeah, he was like, $8 is like a week's allowance for a kid.
Yeah.
What can you get for $8 these days? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, you could go to,
I guess, get like candy, I guess.
Yeah, it'd be candy. I don't know.
No, but yeah, like Diego figuring out parenting this episode was pretty funny.
Mastering. Yeah. Meanwhile, Luther is making a mixtape for Sloan. Wait, where did he get all these tapes and this equipment? Like, this, I think, okay, maybe let's expand. We were curious about the money thing. Maybe this hotel is just kind of magical.
I think it's a magic hotel. Yeah, for sure. Because it was built by Alien, Reggie Man, and he probably put everything that's needed. Also, I will say, if some resorts, not necessarily hotels, will have like random stuff for you to play with. Like, this is not a can I have a deck of cards moment, but it could be like, hey, do you have any, first of all, audio cassettes, where are you going to get them? Second of all,
well, like, I mean,
go ahead.
It's the like, as someone who has done a lot of converting of media, like, you need a lot of equipment to do this. So I don't know.
Because in this case, for those of you who don't know about audio cassettes, how to do this, you'd need two cassette players, and you'd have to play one and record the other and then flip it out and do the whole thing and pray that you had enough space on your tape to get the last song that you wanted at the end, because sometimes it would just cut off because you ran out of space, and that was a travesty. I don't know why you don't make a mixed CD, because they were much easier, but... If you're going for vibes, I guess,
playlist. This is 2019. I don't know. Make a
Mary, stop talking
Spotify so. Playlist. whatever. So this is like the third activity, though, that we've seen in the same location in the hotel. Earlier, we saw them playing pool, and then later on in the episode, they'll be playing Mahjong. So, like, the hotel is just churning out random activities.
So yeah, and also, I feel like, it's like magical. Well, we know it's magical because we see old historical figures walking around many times.
Did you catch any more?
I didn't catch any more, but we get, you know, Teddy Roosevelt at the beginning. We get, you know, just random old people. So when we first got into the hotel, I was like, is this a retirement home for dead people? Like, I didn't know what we were looking at. So I think there are some magical qualities. And we do see that on the other end of this, it is quite magical.
Yes. There's a lot of magic happening.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of surprised still that Luther moved on from Allison so fast.
Yeah, because Victor comes up to Luther and is like, hey, Allison and I are going to go do this thing. We're going to go get the briefcase back. And Luther's like, thank you for taking care of her. And I'm like, but you were just like madly, deeply in love with her. I don't understand. Like, that's all of the emotion that we get between, like, from Luther regarding Allison in this episode, at least.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be more that happens in the next few episodes, but it's just interesting up to this point that, like, based on the first two seasons where a huge part of Luther's character was crushing on Allison, that we just
up and forgot it.
Just gone. Yep. And I kind of don't know how I feel about that, especially because they invested so much time into, like, flashing back to them as kids having a bond. I don't know. But Diego clues Luther in about Victor now, and Luther's like, what else did I miss? I was kidnapped. What happened? And so Luther is going to share with Diego about Sloane and how the sparrows are coming, and it's going to be fun. Like, yeah, they're all really cool. You should meet them. They're so nice. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And meanwhile, Diego was like, No, we need to fight. We need to prep for this. Like, get your, you know, act together.
I did love when Diego found out that Luther was making the mixtape. He's like, it's for the enemy. Like, he's very, like,
this. Focused. It's funny. So Stan still trying to hang out with Diego while Diego's making Molotov cocktails, which he hides around the lobby of the hotel. And I feel like we never see these go off. So I've decided we're on Molotov watch to see if this ever happens.
You mean like in future seasons?
Like in future episodes. Like, is there ever a sequence of like giant explosions where all the Molotov cocktails are going off? Because they're just like hidden randomly throughout the hotel in like potted plants.
Yeah, I know. I mean, good planning. I do love having my needed tools by me at all times. So it is good planning on Diego's part.
I mean, I guess if you know that like the fight's going to happen in this location, I guess Diego's like, yeah, it'd be really cool to just like, you know, have your back up against a wall and like, oh no, you've lost all your knives. Molotov cocktail. So I don't know. Luther wants to throw Victor a party to show they are loved and welcome as brothers. And Diego's like, no, just roll with it. Victor walks up. Diego's like, hey, do you feel loved? Victor's like, yeah. And Diego says, good, you are. All right, let's get back to work.
I loved everything about this scene. That.
It was so cute.
I loved it so much because, like, Luther, like, really wants to throw a party. Diego's like, you just want to throw a party. What do you have against tiny sandwiches? Like all of this stuff. But then also, like, just again showing just, you know, how this, like, a transition of someone in your life doesn't have to be a big deal, and love is the most important ingredient.
And I love when Luther's like, hey, I really like your hair. It framed your face. Number 10, good choice. He's just so happy. It's so cute. Yeah, so then this is where we can talk about the Lila and Five stuff. Sure. And their kind of plot line, just because I want to end on the big scene. But yeah, so Lila and Five, they're going to have a battle while Lila's taking a bath.
Yeah.
Kind of an odd fight.
I don't know if we needed that part, but okay.
I don't know. They're popping around. They're doing their little mimic thing where they're jumping around the bathroom, and then they kind of like, okay, well, we're too evenly matched, so I guess we need to work together to fix the briefcase situation.
Because Five like comes in looking for the briefcase, like, yo, where's the briefcase? She's like, oh, hey, just like go get me my clothes over there. And this is how he finds out that both briefcases are gone. It's really like obvious now on second watch that this is because the commission is no longer like it's very, but I remember on first watch, it was like, what is going on with these, with his briefcases?
Yeah. At first I thought it was more like their powers got revoked or something, but no, or their privileges. So Lila is also going to, at the point where she agrees to go work with Five, Diego's like, wait, hey, you can't just like leave the kid with me. And she's like, actually I can. He was with me for over a decade. So you need to just buck up, be a dad. I don't know. What did you think of all these scenes on the rewatch, knowing that Stan is not actually Diego's son?
Yeah, they didn't hit the same as they did for me the first time. Because the first time I watched, I was like, yeah, Lila, yeah, that makes sense. Like, that makes sense. That's a good point.
And when you think about it now, it's like, Lila, why are you trusting Diego with your friend's kid?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I do. And also I do feel for Stan for being like part, like a pawn in this whole thing.
Is Stan a pawn? I mean, well, he's a pawn in that he's going to die. But like, is he a pawn in that, like, it seems like he's in on it and is just kind of having fun?
Well, yeah, but he's also a child. Like that.
Well, there's that.
That part's where I feel like, hey, what kid is going to turn down a time traveling adventure with his mom's friend? You know what I mean? And get to hang out with this cool dude who throws knives. Like that. That sounds like something I don't know.
It's I've the never dream. Been.
Yeah, it's one of the things kids like, I guess. But so I don't blame him for going, but like being used in this manipulation of emotions on Diego's part, I do feel a little like he does play into it, because when Lila's like, hey, it's been 10 days for you, but it's been 10 decades or a decade for me or something. I've slept with many, 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 many men. And Stan's like, yeah, many, many. Like, many so men. He plays into it, but and he has fun with it. But I still, you know, especially in this part where I know that Lila's lying, this go around, I'm like, oh, just have a conversation, Lila. It's not as fun. It's not as fun, for sure.
They can't. Now, I don't really understand how, but somehow they managed to like jumpstart the briefcases.
Well, first they decide to try and jumpstart it like a car. So they take like actual cables and attach it to an electrical source and then put it onto a briefcase, which Lila admits she knows isn't going to work, and just like basically electrocutes Five for fun, I guess. But then they like decide, they realize that they have energy. They are energy source that is like also, I guess, from the same frequency or could be used on the briefcase, I guess. So they end up like holding hands with the briefcase. Lila mimics Five's powers and basically tries to hotwire that way instead.
Yeah, I don't quite understand how this worked, because if the commission is gone and this is why the briefcase aren't working, why would they be able to be fixed this way?
I don't know how briefcases work, so I cannot help you in this case. I don't know if there's like a homing beacon that they can like turn on. It's like the only place they could go back is the commission, you know, like if the commission is dead. I mean, Five would know, because we know that Five's the founder. Five that's would know.
You know what, we'll have to talk about that in another episode, because I still don't quite, I need to wrap my mind a little bit more around how that all makes sense. They do have a conversation where Lila's like still upset about Five killing her birth parents and for letting the Swedes kill the handler. I think this is also pointing to some evidence that maybe Lila has not actually been by herself for a decade like she says that she was, because this is all still pretty fresh for her. Mm-hmm. But Five is like, look, Diego loves you and the handler didn't, and she tried to kill you, and you should really just concentrate on the people that actually care about you this time.
Yeah, which is, I think, something Five has had to deal with in his own life many times.
This is why you just should fall in love with mannequins instead.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Makes more sense. So they travel to the commission, and it's very snowy, and we're going to find out in the next episode that it's sort of abandoned and crumbling. I don't really quite understand how this commission works.
Did you know it was the commission the first go-around? Because I was like, we're on Hoth or something. I have no idea where we were.
No, I did, because it's got that sort of very recognizable dome-shaped building that's we've seen a couple every other time they've gone to the commission. So I recognized it. But it's curious how the grandfather paradox affected the commission, because it didn't, like, wipe it out of existence. It seems to have sort of, like, attacked it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, like, crumbled it. And
well, and since the commission, I believe, exists in the 50s, I think, is, like, when...
I think that makes sense.
That was when it, but it's like, so the past is also crumbling along with the present.
Well, and I think that's what Five kind of explains when he realizes that both briefcases aren't working. It's like time is going to collapse on itself. Like, yeah, because there's no commission, there's no timeline, which means we're basically going to fold in. I mean, like, at this, knowing now, it's like, you're going to fold in, like, in a black hole. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah.
Man, this is bad. Sense. This is much worse than the apocalypse.
Yes.
So then we get the battle between the Sparrows and, well, I don't even know if you can call it a battle, but the
face-off, the confrontation.
Yeah, confrontation between the Sparrows and at least some of the Umbrella Academy, Victor, Allison, Diego, and Luther, who are there. Mm-hmm. I love how the Sparrows are all in uniform. Also, the Umbrella Academy people have kind of, like, just started all wearing black.
Yeah, except for, like, Diego's got, like, a khaki vest, which was an interesting choice in my mind. But on the Sparrow uniforms, I have to say, creative use of zippers. Like, I think Jamie's zipper, like, wraps around her uniform, mm-hmm. which I thought was interesting. So shout out to the costume designers out there. Well done.
Yeah, I always love when a group is wearing, like, almost the same thing, but slightly different variations. Mm. Love that. Even in their workout gear, when they were running on the treadmills, they all had, like, the same color, but, like, slightly different shorts or sports bras or whatever. Love that. Sloan tries to signal to Luther to run away, but he's a huge dum-dum, and he's like, what?
Bun? It was so funny, because she's, like, mouthing run, and he's like, bun?
No.
Bun? What sense does that make, Luther? What sense?
I don't know. Maybe he thought it was a pet name.
Like, or, like, she's telling him that she's pregnant.
No,
like,
she can't find out you're pregnant in one day. Well, I mean
they got superpowers, and there's a grandfather paradox. Who knows? But
imagine, instead of being like, I'm pregnant, you're like, bun.
Bun?
There's a bun in the oven. Victor tries to just talk it out, but the Sparrows are like, no, let's fight. And then Stan runs down with a flaming, I guess he's got a Molotov cocktail, and then he, like, accidentally lights the hotel on fire.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, this was classic kid.
Classic,
like,
Stan.
Yeah. I mean, what is the kid going to do if you give them a Molotov cocktail?
Like, I forgot to mention it earlier, but, like, the scene where they're all trying to have a serious conversation, Stan is in the corner, like, quote unquote, practicing his karate.
This is Cobra Kai.
Yeah. Diego keeps yelling at him and is like, stop. Now is not time for your karate. And he's like, Mom said that I need to practice. And he's like, you do. You suck. It's really funny. Oh, man. I really, really thought I was going to hate Stan. This is, like, the biggest. The biggest change of expectations was just in how much I love Stan. So then Christopher the Cube does something like electrocutie to the brains of the people. I don't really know what he's doing.
As a player of the Dungeons and Dragons, this is what I think is psychic damage. So I think this is it is damage to their brains, but I think that's, you know, the technical term for it.
Oh yeah, yeah. Nice. You know, come to these podcasts for Marissa's D&D references and my Tenet references. That's where we're really where we're at. Lester then runs down the stairs and he does, like, a giant little blasty blast. It's because they're sort of in two staggered lines. Faye and Christopher and Ben avoid the blast, but Jamie and Alfonso take it full on, and Luther pushes Sloan out of the way, who was also in the front line.
Yeah, like, let's talk about this a little bit. So Lester not only just, like, comes in and does a, like, he's walking, and then, like, you can see energy, like, energy is, the blasty blast is coming out of everywhere. Like, it's not just, like, it's not like a Cyclops blasty blast or from the Boys where they have the laser eyes. It's not like a Victor where they have, you know.
Well, Victor kind of also does, like, their whole body.
Yeah, but I think, like, I saw that, like, it was coming out of all of the places. So I was like, oh, this is a very powerful person, you know, yes. Like I was a little afraid, and it's a wave of energy. Like there was no control. I don't think there's control to a point, but it also was like a widespread energy blast that apparently only went to a certain height. Like it didn't go down. Like you could duck sort of under it.
At you like head height. And so the other one's kind of avoided by just dropping to the ground. But because Alfonso and Jamie caught it like right in their faces start to like, I don't know,
burn.
Melt and burn. Yeah. And then they collapse, and we find out later they did.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was really interesting because I was totally expecting on the first watch of this, I was expecting all sparrows, all Umbrella Academy, all the time, all the way.
Yeah.
This makes sense why we see, not that the scene, we didn't love the scene in season two of the fight with Jamie and Alfonso before, but this makes sense from a show production standpoint. Like, let's put these people in the front of the story because we know they're not necessarily going to make it to the end of the story. So,
and I know that you have a lot of characters and you need to trim down some of them, but I'm still shocked that we lose Marcus so after one episode and that we lose Jamie and Alfonso in one swoop in this episode.
Yeah.
I really wanted more Jamie.
I also liked Alfonso. Like, yeah. I thought he was pretty fun. And I don't know if you could look at this as like, was this Ben's plan? Was this another, not, was it Ben's plan to get, you know, to have two of his siblings die? But Ben's leadership here is not that great. He's like, he comes in, he has everybody line up, and then he's like, hey, we're here. And then he's like, Christopher, attack, and then retreat. That's it. Like, we never see him go on the attack. We never see him do anything like that. So I think it's just kind of trying to show a little bit to us about his lack of leadership, really.
Well, and since it seems like Lester, aka Harlan, came to attack because his friends, most notably Victor, were being attacked. If the sparrows had just come in and talked like Victor wanted,
right,
probably wouldn't have happened. So really, it's all Ben's fault. Let's just blame Ben.
That's, you know, and I think, again, we've talked a little bit about how Ben really just wants to be accepted and, you know, feels like he's less than. I think this is, you know, just snowballing into that feeling for him.
Like, and this was something I had mentioned last episode about wanting to kind of track whether or not I thought there were any correlations between the sparrows and the Umbrella Academy. And I do feel like this, let's just go attack, let's get them from Ben, number two, was very similar to like what Diego was doing here. Like, let's make the Molotov cocktails, let's attack, etc. Whereas,
well, and
I
it's
do
also
think,
true to very Diego in other seasons.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, no, this tracks for Diego. And I mean, like, even Marcus and Luther were both very much like a little more willing to talk it out, a little more willing to, although that mostly is a season three Luther trait, because I think season one Luther would have been a little more attacky. But
so
Victor recognizes the old man as Harlan somehow. I don't know how, but
I'm gonna guess vibes.
Vibe check. It's like, yeah, pretty sure that's that boy that I accidentally gave powers to.
That I babysat that one time a while ago. Like yesterday, but really also decades ago.
So I was going to ask what your favorite song was from this episode, but like we talked about, besides the one from the beginning, which I have to scroll back up because I forgot what it was. Do You Believe in Magic?
Yeah.
There wasn't a whole lot. I mean, there is the sequence with Luther making the mixtape where there's a lot of songs mentioned. They talk about whether or not Lionel Richie is cool.
I have to say, the Dancing on the Ceiling music video blew my mind as a child because it was also very similar to Singing in the Rain when there's dancing on the walls. So I was like, oh my gosh, they made it from the wall to the ceiling. What the heck is happening? And then I was also like really flabbergasted when I learned that Nicole Richie was Lionel Richie's daughter. I was just like, whoa. So this episode took me back to all of that. But I would say like my favorite musical moment was Luther singing Lady in Red by himself.
Yeah, that's another good one. That's another good one. I saw that you had posted in the Discord the behind the scenes TikTok making of the Footloose battle. If you haven't checked that out, that's really cool. Yeah, just really shows it, like, that's the one downside of TV, right? When they do the editing of multi cameras, you can't always see all of the steps. Like, I always say that when they film musicals, like with when they, you know, filmed Hamilton and put that on Disney Plus, it's like, I wish they had just put the camera in one spot and like, let me watch it, because you can't get a full scope of like all the dance numbers when they're moving around and cutting the camera angle so much. But it was very impressive.
Yeah. And they're making decisions for us as the viewer, right? Like, look at this thing, look at that thing. And sometimes when you get to see the whole thing, you get to see something hidden or just something special that you wouldn't have seen otherwise. But yeah, it's one of my favorite behind the scenes that it just popped up on my TikTok and I was like, oh, look at you.
Yeah. So something else I've been tracking, of course, are the Umbrella Academy and Sparrow emblems that they're doing at the beginning. First two seasons, a lot of the openings, it was just an umbrella somewhere in them. But this one on the commission video, when the curtains close on the stage where they've like recorded the play that they're filming, one curtain has a sparrow emblem and one has an umbrella. So keep on tracking that.
I think it's fun that they're including both the umbrella and the sparrow throughout, throughout the season.
Because in this universe, they both exist equally.
Yeah.
So any other particular reflections on episode three in relation to season three? I know we went through a lot of them.
I mean, it's definitely going to set up a lot of the storylines that we'll be talking about for the future upcoming episodes. So we've got the commission situation will be something that hangs out, I think, for a couple more episodes. The Luther and Sloan thing. One thing that was like a result of the showdown, for lack of a better term, was the fact that Luther kind of tackled Sloan to the ground. And when the sparrows retreated, I don't think Sloan left. So like, I think Sloan is being separated from the sparrows. I don't know. I'll have to double check that on going forward.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on that one.
But the whole Luther Sloan thing will be a thing going forward. So yeah, it's just a big setup episode,
but you know, it's still a good one. We talked through a lot of time travel stuff. You know, I know that people listening are probably like, y'all got to stop breaking down time travel, but not actually coming to any conclusions. You know what? It's more about the discussion. No, it's about the hypothesis.
I cannot call up Albert Einstein as much as I would like to. I cannot. Maybe Klaus could. Maybe that'll show up in another season. He gets to talk to Al. We'll find out.
Maybe. All right. Well, that's really everything for episode three. We'll be excited to come back in a couple days for our episode four coverage. And, you know, that'll just continue through until we get to episode 10. So make sure you reach out to us in all the aforementioned places and subscribe to all the feeds or whichever feed that you so choose. I personally recommend the Umbrella-Academy-feed because... That's our feed.
Yeah.
So go check that one out. Do you have anything else you'd like to plug, Marissa?
I just want to mention that this is probably coming out on the 1st of July, and the first of the month is always a great time to join the Patreon program, mainly because you get charged for whatever amount you choose in its entirety whenever you join. So you might as well get the full month out of it. So if you go to patreon.com/postshowrecaps, you can get access to our Discord. We are actually also, we have some exclusive podcasts that you can listen to by becoming a patron, and you can get access to both of those things at any level of patronage. So we really appreciate our patrons and would love for you to join us. And that's really also where you can hear or find us talking about the show as well. So we hope to see you there. Other than that, you can find me on Twitter at MarsBars, MarzBars.
Awesome. And you can follow me everywhere at Frail Mary. And if you want to check out what I'm doing over at Kowski Cast, Cow with a K, you can listen to our most recent Riverdale episode that dropped yesterday as the day that you are listening to this, if you're listening to this on the first day it's released. So make sure you check that out. We've been having a lot of fun with all the ridiculous things happening in Riverdale. All right. Until next time.
Ah. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.